for some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
Welcome, everybody. We are back on the airwaves here at FTN Network. This is the FTN DataCast, a brand new, rebranded podcast at the FTN Network. My name is Adam Pfeiffer. You hopefully remember me from Fade the Chalk, but really excited here to bring a brand new episode, a brand new podcast, and a brand new opening episode, I should say, of a brand new podcast, the FTN DataCast, and I am thrilled to have my co-host that'll be joining me throughout this adventure here at FTN Network, doing a bunch of great NFL content this upcoming season and throughout the rest of the offseason. It's Tyler Lochner joining me to bring you this great episode and this great podcast here at FTN DataCast. Tyler, what's up, man? You excited? How are we doing?
Dude, I am hyped. Thanks for the intro, Adam. Thanks to all the listeners out there. The DataCast, we've been talking about this for a while. It's been something that we've wanted to do really since we started FTN a couple of years ago. And I'm just hyped to get it off the ground. There's so much awesome data at FTN, the tools, you know, we have our own data as well. It's we can really find some awesome stuff here, and I'm pumped to get into it. Off season, into the season, really everything. No stones will be left unturned.
Yeah, and when I was talking about this yesterday, I was on an NBA stream with Kyle Murray, and he was plugging it at the end of the stream. He asked me if I pronounce it data or data, and I didn't even know. Like, I had to kind of say it out. Yeah, right, exactly.
I think I do both.
I think I said, like, at times I would say, like, the data cast when talking about the podcast, but when we, like, talk about the site FTN data, I say data. So when we talk about this podcast and when we intro the podcast and say the name of the podcast on the podcast, I think I'm going to pronounce it like three or four different ways. Actually, three or four. I don't think there's more than two pronunciations of the word data. But before we get into it, our first episode here is going to be breaking down some of the craziest moves from this crazy offseason of the NFL, trades, free agency, all that great stuff. But before we get into that, Tyler, tell everybody that's listening exactly what our goal is on this podcast, because it's obviously fantasy football based, but it's not going to be just, you know, obviously more so in season. It's not going to be, okay, play this receiver because this team gives up this amount of fantasy points per game to that position. Right. But the goal of this podcast is to drive everyone to the amazing data we have over at the site.
Yeah, no, it is amazing. The tools we have are amazing. It's obviously they're all self-serve, so easy for anybody to just become a smarter fantasy football player. Honestly, at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Data is everywhere out there about fantasy football. But like you said, Adam, the most basic stuff is, oh, this team gives up X amount of points to wide receivers, so play this guy. And often that's about players that you're going to play anyway. So the advice isn't super actionable. But we're going to get pretty nerdy here, dive into as much data as possible, but obviously have some fun too.
Yeah. So again, the podcast will be once a week, maybe twice a week during the season. But if you are, you know, first of all, we hope you enjoy your stay here on the podcast. But if you are listening to the podcast and you're not signed up at FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, like that's where you get all this data, right? We're going to plug so many, you know, premium advanced stats, not just throughout the course of this podcast, but starting today on this first episode. So if you're looking for more of that, that's where you go. FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, FTN Bets, all that great stuff. And it's really exciting. Like when we kind of talked about launching this, I thought it was an incredible idea because so often, and I'm sure you do too, do I just get lost in all of the numbers, and to be able to talk about it on the podcast, it just makes a ton of sense. So glad to be here. Hopefully everybody enjoys, and let's get right to it because, dude, this offseason was so insane. It got to the point where I was legitimately afraid to leave my phone because I was probably going to miss something. We're going to talk about some of the major takeaways from the offseason. I'll let you start, man. Like, you could start anywhere. There was like 10 moves that were considered major moves, but let's start wherever you want. Let's break it down for fantasy impact of some of these offseason moves. Where do you want to start?
Let's start in Green Bay and all the kind of craziness. I feel like Aaron Rodgers started the weird off season with like, oh, I might retire, maybe go to Denver. And then he ends up going to Green Bay. And then what, like a few days later, I don't remember the exact timeline, but then Devontae Adams gets traded. And I kind of feel like Rodgers might have instantly regretted his choice after that.
And that was one of those where I actually did leave my phone and it caught me.
I couldn't believe it.
It caught, like, I came back from doing NBA content and then all of a sudden he's no longer playing in Green Bay.
I legitimately couldn't believe it because Rodgers and Adams, you know, they're buddy-buddy. And they did the whole, like, Last Dance Instagram crap last off season, and then Rodgers strings everyone along. Adams was already on the franchise tag, and then you thought, boom, they're going to, you know, be together for at least a few more years. And then everything just gets blown up. And I think the crazy thing is, we'll get into some analysis here, but I genuinely think the craziest thing is that Adams apparently chose to go play with Carr and get away from Green Bay, which we'll talk, I guess we can talk about it now. It's a huge downgrade for him. You know, Derek Carr is fine, right? He's kind of like the epitome of an average NFL quarterback. I call it quarterback purgatory, but you go from maybe probably a top five quarterback in NFL history. I personally don't fully get it unless Adams knows that this might be Rodgers' last year or something like that. But I think let's talk about the impact on Adams. I think he's still a fantasy wide receiver one. We'll just get that out of the way first. Mm-hmm. But what his presence in Las Vegas, I'm probably going to say Oakland, probably for at least another few years, but what his presence in Vegas does is it really shakes things up for the people that are already there. Cause he comes in, you know, obviously becomes the instant number one wide receiver there, which is big news for Darren Waller and for Hunter Renfro. And I think Renfro in particular, he had 128 targets last year. That's definitely not going to happen again. I think Renfro technically finished as a fantasy wide receiver one, especially over the second half of the year. He was like an every week instant starter. I think he goes maybe to like the wide receiver 40 range. He's like a wide receiver three, maybe, with Adams here. Adams is an incredible red zone target. As we know, he's averaged about 12 touchdowns a year over the last 6 years, which is just kind of mind blowing. It's really hard to reach double digits back to back years. And he seems to do it every single year. And then Darren Waller, Adams and Waller play such different roles that I actually think Waller will still be okay, but his touchdown potential goes down. He had 9 in 2020. He only had 2 last year. I don't think we see him come close to 9 again with Adams there. And then I am curious to hear your take on Carr, what this does to your opinion of Carr, because I guess I already shared that I think he's pretty average, but I'd love to hear your take here.
Yeah, so overall for the Raiders, obviously you're getting, you know, arguably still the best receiver in the NFL added to your offense. I think what helped Hunter Renfro a ton last year, and I watched a lot of these Raiders games, and there was a lot, even what before he had, you know, injury concerns down the stretch last year, there was a lot of underwhelming games from Darren Waller. And a lot of people were kind of worried and wondering why. And he was getting bracket coverage a lot, like a lot last season. And Hunter Renfro benefited from that, just underneath targets from Derek Carr. I think obviously Renfro, it's, you know, it's a pretty obvious statement that he's going to come back down. Not to being irrelevant, but not being a top, you know, 15 receiver. I think
he risks being irrelevant. I'm going to be honest.
It's not a crazy take because you still have Waller there. Adams, the thing with Adams is like, there was not a better rapport in the NFL over the last 5 years than Rodgers and Adams, right? One of my favorite stats to look at on FTN Fantasy in the premium stats, advanced receiving, you can look not only at how many targets receivers have, because everybody, that's everywhere, but at FTN Fantasy, we have first read targets, and I reference this a lot in my articles and everything. So I'm sure you have the number in front of you, but if you don't, we'll play a guessing game. Devontae Adams last year had 169 total targets. How many do you think were the first read he was on? of those.
I like this because I don't have this in front of me.
Okay. I asked my buddy this earlier too, and he was like, he guessed a high number, and it wasn't even high enough. So there's your hint.
I know he had a 30% market share, but I don't know if how that correlates to first read. I'll go with 100 of them, over half of them at least.
It's 150.
What?
150 That's first read targets. Yeah, 150 first read targets.
So basically, every single play.
Right. Which
is a first.
If you watched Green Bay, it wouldn't surprise you, right? They're not. You know, that's just their offense. He's not going to get that with Derek Carr. There's probably not a better connection for quarterback receiver after Rodgers for Davante Adams than Derek Carr. They obviously played together at Fresno State.
Right.
And there was reports and rumors that like Adams a couple weeks prior to the news bought a house in Vegas. So like everything's kind of tying together. I agree. Like I think there's a lot of people that say he's still like the wide receiver two right behind Cooper Kupp. And there's some that believe he's outside the top seven or eight. And I think he's kind of in between, kind of like wide receiver. I think I ran my first run of rankings over at FTN Fantasy. He was like wide receiver four. Like, I still think he's going to be good, but like I think we'll talk about Tyreek Hill next, but like what the moves for Adams and Hill has really done, it's just made it even more solidified that Cooper Kupp's the wide receiver one.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So
I'd agree with that. I think if I'm doing a draft right now, I'm not letting Adams go past the fifth wide receiver off the board. Mm-hmm. He's going to be
used. I did a mock recently with Daniel Kelly, our editor, Zach Graham, a couple people from FTN just for an article, and he still went at the end of the first round. So,
yeah, I think that makes sense.
It was three receivers too, so that helps. But
I also think he's pretty much exactly what the Raiders need. I mean, they lost in the playoffs. They couldn't get in the end zone, right, against the Bengals and during the wild card. And that's exactly what Adams brings to the table. So we know, I think his usage is going to be fine. And honestly, that 30% target market share, I think he hits that again.
Yeah, they don't throw the running backs.
Yeah.
They have Josh McDaniels now, so we'll see. But yeah, I would say no worse than like 27%.
Yeah, I totally agree there. But I will say, switching over to the impact on Green Bay.
Yeah, this is more interesting for me, honestly.
Yeah, same here. I was, I'm not going to lie, I was shocked when I went to the FTN splits tool and I looked at Aaron Rodgers from 2016 through last year with and without Adams on the field. And so 2016 is roughly when Adams became like a big factor in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. And Rodgers' stats are up across the board, right? Not surprising when Adams is on the field, but it's really not that big of a difference. And then like his passing yards, he throws for, what is this, 9 more passing yards per game. And he scores a half more fantasy point per game with Adams on the field. But what's really interesting is he actually throws for fewer touchdowns per game when Adams was on the field versus when Adams was on the field. It's still pretty close.
This is since when? Sorry?
This is since 2016.
Okay.
So that was the first year that Adams really, really popped. Rodgers obviously is great at all times. But I do think this is going to be the biggest test for Rodgers in his career because he's always played with at least one really great top tier wide receiver. Greg Jennings had a stretch where he was extremely talented. Jordy Nelson had this like telepathic ability with Rodgers and was deadly together. And then Adams, I think everyone will agree, is the best receiver Rodgers has played with. And now he goes to Alan Lazard, who has never had more than 40 receptions in a year. And then the corpse of Randall Cobb, who Rodgers like begged for Randall Cobb to come back to Green Bay and then like never even used him. I think it's fair to say the Packers are going to draft at least one of these wide receivers coming in.
They have two opportunities in the first round.
Although it would be pretty classic Green Bay to not do it. Like they'll just like draft a quarterback or something.
I'm daydreaming every day of Chris Olave with this team. We get to that another day, but they have to go receiver at some point.
They do. They have to pick a receiver because they can't roll in with Lazard and Cobb and right after re-signing. Right. There's no way that happens. And they might even, I would say they might even trade for one, but I feel like they would have done that by now.
Brandon Cooks, there was a report today about the Texans getting offers for him. So, I mean, it would just make sense for Brent. He's played with like every Hall of Fame quarterback, essentially, right? Brees, Brady.
He does. Yeah,
go for the right. hat trick with Rodgers. Might as well.
I think I will just say this. I was surprised to see that Rodgers' stats, again, this is in the FTN Fantasy Splits tool. I was surprised to see that his stats are really not that impacted when Adams was off the field. Granted, it's only a sample size of 8, but that's like a half season.
Right. And the so one thing I will say is Jordy Nelson was on the team for 2016 and 2017.
Yep. So and was that, still good.
Yeah, that definitely helps. This team right now, that you talked about, it, the makeup nothing. Of it is Lazard. It's Robert Tonyan, who they had to bring back because they just needed pass catchers. Aaron Jones, though, like, what does this do for you? Like, because you're kind of getting to it. What does it do for Rodgers? Like, where would you kind of slot him in at quarterback, which is always a deep position? And then what does it do for Aaron Jones? Because looking at the FTN splits for Rodgers, you could look at him for Aaron Jones, too. And, like, there's concerns about A.J. Dillon's rushing attempts and volume the last year and a half, but maybe that gets, you know, you maybe not as worried about that if he's getting 7 targets a game.
I think really interests me. You mentioned him is Dylan. I think we're going to see a lot more AJ Dillon 2-yard touchdown runs because that's what Adams thrived, right? Just like pitch and catch with Adams and Rodgers at the 1 or 2 yard line. Those are going to be AJ Dillon rushing touchdowns now. But then yeah, Aaron Jones in PPR leagues in particular, he's definitely going to get more work. We know that Rodgers likes receivers that he trusts. Like that's very well known. And he loves Aaron Jones.
Yeah. And looking at the FTN splits tool since 2018, Aaron Jones has played in looks like 7 games without Davante Adams in the lineup. In those games, 6.7 targets per game compared to 4 targets per game with Adams in the lineup, over 5 receptions and over 55 receiving yards per game. So
that's you a talked great
about
point.
It. Yeah. And you talked about it. Like Rodgers has always been, yes, he's played with talented receivers, but like he, like Davante Adams obviously became the best receiver in football, but like it's this obvious, you know, theme that they have not had a first round receiver. Right. So it's not like he's, you know, he's had a elite prospect kind of fall into his lap. He's had to develop the trust with Jordy Nelson and Greg Jennings and Randall Cobb and Davante Adams. Jones is that guy right now. And the second, like Alan Lazard had been starting to get more trust from him down the stretch of last season.
They have 8 touchdowns.
Right. I think Lazard, if they don't make a crazy move, which the only move it looks like they're going to make is drafting receivers. Like right. Like I got him at the last round of that mock draft. Like he's going to be relevant this year. He was relevant as a streamer at times when MVS was out of lineup. Obviously MVS isn't there anymore either. So, you know, don't sleep on Alan Lazard either. Before we go to Miami, because there's a lot to sort out Miami, where would you slide in Aaron Rodgers right now at quarterback? Because it's not just the fact that like you can say, okay, it's a huge difference losing Davante Adams, but when there's so many good quarterbacks, you have to kind of use every situation and say, okay, this makes that much of a difference to where I move him from quarterback 4 to potentially quarterback 7, 8, 9, what have you.
Yeah, I think my first run of rankings will be published this week, and cool. he's going to land in the 8 to 10 range for me. There's just, like you said, there's so many good quarterbacks, and Deshaun Watson is added back. I think he instantly goes above Rodgers without Adams. This could change if something happens at the draft, right? You know, a big trade. Brandon Cooks would make me like right. Rodgers more. But as of right now, I slot him kind of towards the back end of the QB1s. It's just such a deep position.
Yeah. It's like if the rookie quarterbacks take a step forward, it gets even deeper, right? Like yeah. The sophomores coming up.
Yeah. Fields and Lance. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It can be really deep all of a sudden. So all right, let's get to the Miami Dolphins. We can just kind of, you know, package in everything, but let's start with the headline, Tyreek Hill. That, again, talk about coming out of nowhere. We see all these receivers getting these deals, these massive deals, and then all of a sudden comes out, Tyreek Hill's not, and the Chiefs aren't getting a long-term deal done, which was crazy because there was reports that they were about to get it done, like a week and a half, 2 weeks before that. It's like, oh, it's about to be, you know, confirmed. They're going to get to an extension. Now he's a Miami Dolphin, and this obviously impacts a ton. We'll break down the Chiefs side and the Dolphins side, but let's talk about the Dolphins, because I think they're being talked about a little bit more just because obviously Tyreek Hill is now on the team, but there's there's people that are on the Tua Tagovailoa breakout, and there's people that are still off of it, and there's deep passing numbers being, you know, cited. What do you think this does for the offense? Of course, they also have a new head coach, new play calling with Mike McDaniel. They're talking about maybe using him in a Deebo Samuel type role. I think that's ludicrous. We need to stop pretending horrible. Other players are Deebo Samuel, because they're just not. But what do you think of Tyreek Hill to the Miami Dolphins? Let's start with the Miami side, what it does for Tyreek, Jalen Waddle, and of course, Tua Tagovailoa.
I hate everything about this. I'm not even going to lie. Honestly, it breaks my heart. Ever since, I actually think it was a preseason game, and I think it was 2018, and Patrick Mahomes launched this like 75-yard touchdown pass to Tyreek Hill, triple coverage. Tyreek Hill's like 5 yards past every defender, and it's like, wow, this is the dream made in heaven. And the duo made in heaven, and they've broken up now. And it hurts me. I actually think Mahomes and Tyreek was the most fun wide receiver quarterback combination to watch since Brady and Moss in 2007. Sure. Like every week, every play, you know, like, just, I know you're a Bills fan, so I'm sorry to say this, but like the playoff game against the Bills, Tyreek did everything. They even put him back for a punt return, and he almost returned it for a touchdown at a critical moment. So just from like a fan perspective, but also from a fantasy perspective, I despise this move. I think it is so bad. And I would have loved to have just been like a fly on the wall when Tyreek got the call from his agent. And he's like, no, I'm not signing this deal with the Chiefs. I want to trade. And then his agent calls and he's like, all right, here's the deal, Tyreek. We have offers on the table, but it's the Jets and the Dolphins. Those were his choices, right? And then he has to like act excited, like he's pumped to go to Miami. There's no way he's excited to go from Patrick Mahomes to Tua. And I'm sorry, I just kind of went on a rant, but this one hurt me. I think that Tua is just, you said there's some people on him as a breakout and there's some people completely off. I'm off. I am just so off Tua. I've never been on, so I can't even say I've jumped off. I just don't think he's a good NFL quarterback when there's so many incredible quarterbacks in the league right now.
Yeah, we'll find out if he's the answer this year.
This is definitely the year that we'll find out the answer, but honestly, I feel like we could have figured it out last year. Jalen Waddle, Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki, I don't know how to pronounce that one, I'm going to be honest. That's a pretty good receiving core. And Tua kind of got a pass with it. And yes, adding Tyreek does make it better for sure. But Tua only averaged 7.03 average depth of target. That was like Ben Roethlisberger, Jared Goff were the only quarterbacks that had a lower average depth of target. And I also think the fact that he's a lefty, I realized when I was doing the analysis for this, I think I'm an armist. I don't know if that's a word, but I think I don't like the fact that Tua is a lefty. And I also don't think it, like, when was the last good lefty NFL quarterback? Was it Steve Young?
Michael Vick.
Okay. Yeah. Michael Vick. True. Vick was good for his like rushing more than his passing, obviously. But like Steve Young as a passer is probably the last like really great one. Anyway, just from like an actual stats perspective, Tua threw 39% of his passes last year to the short right. And Tyreek was 35% of his targets were short left. And I think that, I don't necessarily think that's like a game breaking thing that, you know, they could just line up Tyreek to the short right. But I do think that it's a little bit of a shift of how Tyreek has been used and just the fact that Tua is a completely different quarterback. His throwing motion or his throwing reminds me of Tim Tebow, and it's probably just because they're both lefties, but maybe that's why I don't like Tua.
I think it's interesting because, like, obviously Tyreek Hill, like the most unstoppable deep threat in the NFL since, you know, the last, you know, handful of seasons. And immediately once he joined the team, everybody was kind of talking about, okay, Tua's deep passing numbers were pretty good last year, right? He was like among the league leaders in, you know, he was up there in passer rating, up there and mm-hmm. all the numbers. But then you look at our deep passing stats over at FTN Fantasy. Only 6.7% of his passing attempts were of the deep passing variety. That was the lowest rate in the NFL among quarterbacks with at least 100 passing attempts. So they didn't ask him to do it a lot.
So sad.
Right. Now, I will say, in terms of Tua to have like a full-on breakout, being he's not going to be like a top 10 quarterback, but to just, I don't think he's going to have to do a ton with this offense. I think it's the fastest offense in the NFL, not to mention Waddle, Tyreek, and now Raheem Mostert. I think with Mike McDaniel there, it's going to be a lot of what they did in San Francisco, getting the ball out and letting the receivers make plays after the catch. And that's fine for Tua. But the whole, where Tyreek Hill, I don't know if Tyreek Hill is going to be used down the field nearly as much. Like last year, it came down a ton. Tyreek Hill was a completely different receiver last year. He was a high target, you know, lower yardage receiver because teams were playing so much too high safety looks. I think like it was 80% of the time they saw that on their pass plays during the first like month or first half of the season. And you saw a lot less deep passes from Tyreek Hill. Patrick Mahomes had a career low in yards per attempt. And I don't think teams are going to stop doing that well against Tyreek Hill. So Tyreek Hill was the receiver like between him and Adams where I did make like a substantial drop. Like I believe he's outside of my top 10 or he is 10th at receiver. And it's more so the fact that you still have Jalen Waddle there, who was actually top 10 in first read targets last season. Like Tua threw to Waddle and that's it last year, essentially. And there's still question marks about the offense. So I like AJ Brown, CeeDee Lamb, obviously Jamar Chase. Like I would rather have those receivers, obviously Kupp, obviously Adams, over Tyreek Hill. And it'll be like, it's so interesting now because I think a lot of the players we've seen, you know, we've grown accustomed to seeing as set it and forget it first round fantasy selections, they're probably going to be second round players this year. Like Tyreek Hill second round, maybe Adams second round, like Barkley, Zeke. Like it's kind of crazy this season. But what about the Chiefs side of things? Patrick Mahomes, is it over for Patrick Mahomes? Obviously not, but the offense is going to look different because Tyreek Hill opened everything up for this team.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And I'll say one more thing about Tyreek in Miami before moving to the Chiefs. I agree with you that he'll be around wide receiver 10. I still think he's a fantasy wide receiver 1, but what we won't have anymore, and you can just set this in stone, is the like 2 to 3 just absolute eruption games each season when he just goes off for like 180 plus yards and 2 or 3 touchdowns. I don't think that's going to happen in Miami. I mean, he had like, what did he have? 200. This was 2 years ago, but he had over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns in the first quarter against the Bucs in a regular season game a couple years ago. Like that's completely out the window. And to me, that was always Tyreek's biggest draw, both in redraft, DFS, best ball, basically any format you play. That's always why I loved him. Now shifting over to the Chiefs, I don't even know what to expect. Obviously Patrick Mahomes is still going to be good, but I mentioned this earlier, Mahomes and Tyreek was like a match made in heaven. If you could have designed the perfect wide receiver for Patrick Mahomes, it would have been a player just like Tyreek Hill. I looked at the splits tool. I'm sure you did too. The FTN splits tool since Mahomes took over as the starter in 2018 with he's only played 4 games without Tyreek Hill, but in those 4 games, stats were down across the board, except for touchdowns and rushing yards. He was up a tiny little bit in rushing yards, but it does just go to show how big of a factor Tyreek was in this offense. And what's really interesting is in those earlier years, probably more so 2018, I should have this in front of me, but I don't, but I know it's true. Tyreek really did not see that much volume until the last couple seasons. He was always like below 10 targets. And I always know that would scare people away when they were playing DFS or something. Like, I'm not going to pay $8,000 for a wide receiver that only sees 8 targets, right? But in previous years, or last year, the year before, he was always in the double digit target range. And this really leaves the Chiefs with Travis Kelce as Mahomes's like only wide receiver that he's played with. I know he's a tight end, but he's basically a wide receiver that he's played with and thrived with. And I know they've added other pieces in the offense. I actually think Juju Smith-Schuster is a pretty interesting addition. He's still young. We know he's good, except we can talk about him a little bit more, but just like the identity, what we've known as the Chiefs for the last 4 years, like this unbelievable offense that can score at any point in time. I actually think that's gone because I think Tyreek was the reason they could do that.
Yeah, like the reason that, like, it got to a point where Mahomes was so accustomed to just taking shots down the field when teams were just not, they were just playing their safeties all the way back. I think Buffalo kind of started this. And it was like Mahomes is getting, like, and it happened a little bit with Josh Allen too. It's like Mahomes is getting, like, impatient. Like, he didn't want to keep checking it down for 6 yards. But once he felt more comfortable doing that, it just made the offense so tough to stop because Kelce was getting underneath. And, like, they have MVS there and Mecole Hardman who are going to present some speed, but they're not Tyreek Hill.
Imagine getting excited that you signed Marquez Valdez-Scantling to replace Tyreek Hill. Couldn't be me.
Yeah, like, and again, it came out that they're apparently trying to trade for a star receiver. I just,
what, DK, just, right? That's the rumor.
Yeah, Metcalf, like, maybe, yeah. If that happens, then yeah, like, I don't, again, Metcalf's not Tyreek Hill, but
he's better than MVS.
Yeah, and he'll still be able to do the things Tyreek Hill did for this offense. I actually think this hurts Travis Kelce to an extent. I think he's still going to see massive targets, but what's going to stop defenses from just doubling him? And I'm not saying that that happens. Like, I think it's bad analysis for the most part. Like, oh, like if, or like, say, like, Mike Evans is playing and the Bucks were without all the receivers. Teams don't just throw two defenders on receivers very often, but like bracket coverage, like, that could happen. We saw it with Waller. It could sure as hell happen for Travis Kelce. So, like, I'm not saying don't draft him. Like, he's still going to be amazing. He's the tight end one for me now. I think it was close between him and Andrews before this news. I think the overall target volume helps Kelce, but like in dynasty leagues, like, I would use this as an opportunity to actually trade him.
Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting take because people will view it and say, oh, he's going to get 150 targets, and he might, but they might not be as efficient as targets as he's come across the last couple of years.
I agree with you. And I actually think this comes at a weird time for Kelce because...
Is he 32?
Yeah, he'll turn 33 during the season. I know he's still absolutely shredding on the football field, right? But it's... tight ends don't last too much longer after that. And I also think Juju Smith-Schuster will take up a lot of the space that Kelce has, right? Like,
yeah.
Short, intermediate.
I mean, Juju has essentially been used as a tight end.
Right.
With Pittsburgh, so.
And so now they have two of them.
Yeah.
And, but I will say where I think Kelce gets a boost here, and I don't know if you looked at this or if you have it in front of you, so if not, it's my time to quiz you.
Yeah, go for it.
I'll give away the answer. Tyreek had the most red zone targets in Kansas City. Travis Kelce had the second most at 27. So Kelce had 27 red zone targets. How many do you think Hill had?
So Kelce had 27 and it was second most, right?
Yep.
35.
Tyreek Hill had 43 red zone targets.
Yeah.
So almost 20 more than Travis Kelce. And that now all goes back into the fold. And I actually think Kelce becomes the new guy in Kansas City that pushes for over 40 red zone targets.
Dude, Kelce wasn't even getting end zone targets at a point last season. I remember this.
He wasn't even first or second on Kansas City in end zone targets. DeMarcus Robinson had more end zone targets than Kelce last year. Kelce still scored 9 touchdowns, yeah, which is awesome. But Hill
had a lot of long touchdowns too, though.
He did. Yeah, he had some, like, you know, prime Gronk type plays where he's just like shredding people in the middle of the field. But Hill had 10 end zone targets and Kelce only had 5. Kelce did convert 4 of those to touchdowns. So I think what Kelce might lose in efficiency, there's a chance he makes up for it in touchdowns.
Sure.
A little hard to say because he's already at about 10 touchdowns a year, and it's pretty hard to go too much higher than that.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't score touchdowns. Darrell Williams isn't there anymore. Who's going to score touchdowns?
That's a very good point.
Ronald Jones?
Ronald Jones, let's go.
He's not catching any, that's for sure. He's definitely not catching any.
I can't believe he went to the Chiefs, but we don't need to talk about Rojo. Yeah. But
let's close out the Chiefs real quick with two thoughts. One, I know for a fact they are very, very interested in Jameson Williams if he's there when they're up. That would be such a seamless fit. Again, not Tyreek Hill, but will fit that what they need perfectly. And two, before we move on to the Dolphins backfield and the Cardinals backfield, what do you think of Juju? Because I agree, like, he's after his first couple seasons where it looked like he was like the next amazing receiver, He's obviously been underwhelming in terms of, first of all, the Steelers have had maybe the worst passing game in the NFL the last two seasons. So that hasn't helped. He had one season with Duck Hodges and Rudolph. Last year, there was no downfield passing, and then Juju was hurt. But like, he's 25. We've seen him play at an all-pro level in the NFL. Yes, Antonio Brown was on the opposite side of him, but now he's playing with Patrick Mahomes, and he's playing with Travis Kelce. Like, I think Juju is very interesting. Again, it's a one-year deal, so maybe he plays well and gets brought back again. But Juju, I feel like, is going to be in that, like, I still don't think he's going to be used down the field very often, but I think he could be like a 90 catch, you know, close to 1,000 yard. But he's also been, when he's played, he's been a good touchdown scorer, so he could easily score 10 touchdowns too.
I actually love this landing spot for Juju.
The most sense. I tweeted it too. I was like, when the move happened, I was like, this is maybe the most logical fit for a receiver in free agency we've seen so far.
I think I agree with that. My take on Juju is that he was Big Ben collateral damage, right? Ben just completely lost the ability to consistently throw down the field. Pittsburgh decided, I think rightfully so, that Deontay Johnson was the player they were going to throw to, and then Chase Claypool when they drafted him. So Juju just became the player that would run 3 yards down the field and be like a little safety blanket. But I will say, I know it's just a one game sample, but when Pittsburgh was getting absolutely destroyed by the Browns in the playoffs in 2020, Juju was just absolutely dominating when he was getting targets a little bit more down the field. I think he had 19 targets, 13 receptions, 157 yards and a touchdown in that game. And I'm not saying that that's what he's going to do, but that's what we were expecting of him, right? Early on in his career, like you said, he looked like he was the next great thing. I think he was the wide receiver one in most dynasty rankings after that season for a while. You said he's still only 25 years old. I think he entered the league when he was only 20. I genuinely love this fit. And even though he was so inefficient the last couple of years, he was still scoring touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
He had 9 touchdowns last year or 2 years ago. Last year was a lost season because he was hurt, but 2 years ago, he still had 9 touchdowns. And he scored 7 touchdowns his first couple of years. I think Juju is, I don't know exactly where he's going. I don't have that in front of me in drafts, but I guarantee you wherever it is, it's too low.
Yeah, a lot of the, some of the best ball underdog drafts are going off, and I've done a couple, and he's been like there's receivers that there hasn't been like an adjustment or a correction based off the offseason moves. Juju's one of those receivers, like well outside the top 30 receivers. I have him as a top 30 receiver. And another player we'll talk about shortly is Courtland Sutton, who is, you have to scroll down in terms of ADP. So like, those are two players I take ahead of ADP now, obviously. It should correct, mm-hmm. but yeah. I agree a lot with Juju. We could go to Denver right now. Let's just do it because...
Yeah, we'll talk about... Sutton.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the Miami backfield and the Cardinals backfield with some of the moves, but this is the third, maybe the first, maybe the most, crazy move we saw was... I think it was one of the first ones, though. Russell Wilson, been trade rumors about him leaving Seattle for a while, and it finally happens, traded to the Denver Broncos, and it was like the first move that set off the AFC West kind of dominoes. But Denver, they have their quarterback, Russell Wilson, maybe not the top 5 fantasy quarterback like he's been, but he's still one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL. And a lot of people said it, like, top to bottom roster-wise, Denver's got one of the top rosters in the NFL. They're just missing the most important player.
Yeah.
Now they have that. So Russell Wilson, I'm assuming the answer is just in some way, just the answer is great things, what he does for the Denver receivers. But in detail, Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, obviously now Albert O with Noah Fant in Seattle. What does this do for this offense?
Yeah, I'm sure what we're going to say is not breaking new ground here. It's good for Denver. It's terrible for Seattle. Imagine going from Russell Wilson to Drew Lock. And then I also imagine being Noah Fant and like thinking for a minute that you get Russell Wilson and then realizing that you're still with Drew Lock just on a new team.
It's funny because I wrote about I did a early tight end bust article for FTN Fantasy, and Noah Fant was in that article. And the first line is like, Fant goes from a low volume, crowded passing offense in Denver to a low volume, crowded passing offense in Seattle. Oh, and he still has Drew Lock as his quarterback.
Literally nothing changed for him. Poor guy. So I think just from a high level, the analysis is fairly straightforward, but I do have stats from FTN Fantasy here that will, I think what a question a lot of people will be asking is, okay, who do I like more now, Jerry Jeudy or Courtland Sutton?
It's a very popular question. It's going to be the Robert Woods Cooper Cup from last year. And if you get it wrong, apparently you're screwed.
Man, that was a wrong one to get wrong. But
I got it wrong too.
I will say, after looking at the data, my favorite winner here is Sutton.
Yes, and I agree.
It's because Wilson is just so good with the deep ball. And that is where Sutton is used, and it's where he's been so inefficient. And the theory is because it's because of quarterback play. So Wilson led last year. Wilson led the NFL in deep pass rate, but just about 20% of his passes were deep. And deep means the ball was thrown at least 20 yards in the air past the line of scrimmage. He was also a top five quarterback in deep ball passer rating. So he threw it deep all the time, and he was basically always completing it. And then Sutton, meanwhile, was top 10 in deep target rate. 16% of his targets went deep. But he had by far the worst catch rate on deep balls among wide receivers in the top 25 of deep ball rate. He only caught 44% of his deep balls last year. That is just like mind-bogglingly low. Just for a point of reference, most other players, like if they were at 55%, it was kind of low. So 44% stuck out like a sore thumb. I just like instantly converting on like 15 to 20% more of those deep balls makes Sutton so much more consistent, gives him such a higher ceiling, and just vaults him, I think, close to low end wide receiver two range. And that might sound kind of aggressive, but I think Sutton is Denver's version of Metcalf here. And Metcalf was, of Lockett, as the deep target. And, we know Lockett just had those crazy explosion weeks. And I think we see that from Sutton this year.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. The only thing that I worry about is the volume, because like Denver last year, Sutton splits when Jeudy was healthy were like laughable. He played, I think, 10 games alongside Jeudy last year. In those games, he averaged 3.8 targets, 19 receiving yards per game. 19. Like, the volume has to go up, but at the same time, like, new head coach in Nathaniel Hackett, you bring in Russell Wilson, I don't see how this team can, I don't know if they're going to be 23rd in passing rate again. That, like, even if they go up to, like, 15th, that should be enough for Sutton, even with Jeudy there. Javonte Williams obviously going to get the ball. And Tim Patrick, but I love the spot for Sutton. Like you mentioned, the deep passing rate and everything. But then I went and looked at over at FTN Fantasy, we have a lot of, like, again, just this is why you want this podcast and to go over to look at the data. But you can look at how often a quarterback threw a certain direction on the field. You talked about that earlier with Tua, and how many, percentage of the passes a receiver saw in a part of the field. And it correlates so well with Russell Wilson. Last year, Russell Wilson, 13.4% of his pass attempts went to the deep left part of the field, highest rate in the NFL. You look at the receivers, deep left direction percentage, Courtland Sutton, 14.3%. That was a top 12 number in the NFL. And by the way, Tyler Lockett, no surprise, he was fourth highest at 20.6%. So you're talking about Lockett and Sutton. I couldn't agree more. Again, Jerry Jeudy should be fine too. I think he's more of like the reception PPR getting open, in the intermediate. They're going to play him primarily out of the slot with Patrick and Sutton out wide, but Sutton's going to have plenty of splash weeks. And if this passing offense now with Russell Wilson goes from, like I said, 23rd in passing rate to like 15th, 16th, let alone if they even go higher, I think Russell Wilson is obviously good enough to support two receivers in fantasy. He's done it many times, but Sutton would be my favorite. I agree. And then real quick, Alberto probably going to be like the lock for the fantasy breakout / sleeper of the season. Don't have a huge sample of him without Noah Fant, but like, you can't teach 4-5 speed at 6'5". Like, he's a great prospect, and now he's going to be a full-time player.
Especially with Fant gone, he becomes really interesting. My only question there, like you said, is just how are the targets divvied up? But Albert O does become a very interesting, especially if you wait on drafting tight ends. He becomes extremely interesting there. And he's super athletic. He was He was step for step with Fant in targets all of last year. So with Fant gone, it becomes a whole new ball game with him. And you mentioned, I saw you slip Tim Patrick's name in there.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick is, I genuinely think, a name to.
He's really good. Like he would good. Be the number two on a hand. Like, screw the number. He'd be the number one in Atlanta right now without question.
I might be the number one in Atlanta. Right. The thing with Patrick is, you mentioned Sutton splits with Jeudy on the field. Denver fell in love with Patrick last year, and even Jeudy didn't see many targets. Jeudy never saw over 10 targets in a game last year. And over the final six games of the year, he only averaged 5.6 targets per game. So nobody exactly knows how this is going to shake out, but I do think, just looking at the numbers, you said like it's puzzle pieces that fit with Wilson and Sutton. I think Sutton is the safest of the bunch. I think most people think this is that Jeudy is the number two, but what if Patrick is the number two, right? Like, what if Jeudy just doesn't pan out in the NFL the way everyone wants to? And if that happens, right, if we get to like week two or three and Tim Patrick is still seeing the end zone targets, by the way, Patrick led the Broncos in end zone targets last year. If Patrick is still seeing these high value targets and Jeudy is kind of like the Juju Smith-Schuster Pittsburgh version in Denver, then Patrick becomes like the big fantasy draft winner, right? And I just think he's a name to keep in the back of your mind, because if Jeudy doesn't pan out, it's gonna be Sutton, or it's gonna be Patrick that's the winner.
Let's real quick, Seattle. I mean, who knows if Metcalf or Lockett will be there, but like they're probably, if say they're both on the team when the season starts, it'll probably get to a point where like if whether it's Drew Lock or a rookie quarterback, like it'll get to a point where like Metcalf and Lockett could be potential values. We saw Metcalf still produce with Geno last year. A lot of it was, I think, it like an 80-yard touchdown in that game against the Saints, but he still scored touchdowns down the stretch, which helped him. But Tyler Lockett, like, he really, really, really was hurt by the absence of Russell Wilson when he was hurt last season. His splits with Russ out, there was, I think, three games, 5.3 receptions, which is okay, but the receiving yards went down by about 13 yards per game. He didn't score a single touchdown. His points per game dropped in PPR leagues by about 4.5. So if they don't upgrade the quarterback position, which they really can't other than maybe getting Baker Mayfield or a rookie quarterback, Lockett's going to be an avoid for me. Metcalf could still be a value. He's still immensely talented. He still produced. Andrew Locke, if he's the quarterback, he'll take some shots. He's got a strong arm, but just overall, just not expecting anything great from Seattle compared to years past, huh?
Yeah, I think you hit the analysis there. Just to throw some extra stats at it, again, looking at the deep passing tool we have at FTN, Lockett, among wide receivers that had at least 40 targets last year, Lockett had the most go deep. 21% of his targets were deep. He caught 20 of 25 deep targets. So that's an 80% catch rate, which is extremely high for deep targets.
Yeah, they had the best rapport on deep passes.
They
like,
did.
It's just
they did.
The rainbow throws. Like, it's just, it was stupid.
730 deep receiving yards was the most in the league. Six deep receiving touchdowns was the second most. Only Jamar Chase had more. Everything about that connection, Russ to Lockett, was great. It was a little bit inconsistent just because it relied so much on the deep ball. But this I think crushes Lockett. I really do. And like you said, Metcalf, it's a downgrade for him, but he's like your prototypical wide receiver one. I actually think he'll still be okay.
All right, a couple moves left. Be a bit of a longer pod here, but it's the debut. I don't think anybody will be too upset. We talked a little bit about Raheem Mostert, Chase Edmonds also going to Miami. For me, I'll be quick with Miami. I don't want a single player from that backfield. Like, even in PPR leagues, Edmonds you would think would be the pass-catching back, but Myles Gaskin's still there, and now you have an offense I think is going to be a lot of short passing with Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Mike Gesicki. Like, I know Mostert fits the offense well. He's familiar with Mike McDaniel, but this is still, they improved the offensive line. This is still one of the worst. They were like one of the worst run blocking units in football last year. I still don't think it's a strength for them. So do you have any interest in Mostert or Chase Edmonds now with Miami? Then we'll get to the more interesting part of this is the fact that James Conner RB1 season probably continues into 2022.
I don't have any interest in the Miami backfield. I was pretty excited, honestly, when Edmonds went to Miami.
Initially,
I'm a big Edmonds fan. I think he deserves a big role. But then they added Mostert, and then they traded for Tyreek, and now there's all this talk about Tyreek maybe being used more in the backfield. It's a mess. And I will not be drafting any Miami running backs unless it's an auto draft by accident.
All right, let's go to the Arizona side, because James Conner was obviously fantastic last season, scored 18 total touchdowns. Only Jonathan Taylor had more carries from inside the 5-yard line than Conner with 16. The only downside was when Edmonds was healthy, the pass catching work wasn't there. But you look at the splits, Chase Edmonds in the games he was out, there were 5 games where he was out and Conner played. His targets per game in those games went from 1.3 to 5.5. And his receptions per game with Edmonds out went from 1.2 to 5. So we know he's getting the goal line work in an offense that clearly wanted to run the football in close. And now if he's getting passing down work again, this is another team that quietly needs a receiver. Hopkins will be back. Rondale Moore, you hope you get more in year 2. Wesley's still there, but like no Kirk. AJ Green's gone. Like if they don't add a receiver of significance, I mean, we could be looking at 22 to 25 touches per game from James Conner, and they're paying him like a top 10 running back after that extension.
Yeah, Conner staying in Arizona was awesome. I'm just going to be flat out honest. I was completely wrong about Conner last year. I guess you can say he maybe got a little bit lucky to have such a long run of being featured with Edmonds sidelined, but I mean, credit to him. He slayed. He absolutely dominated when Edmonds was off the field. You already mentioned some of the splits. I have the same in front of me. His, just from like a raw fantasy point scored, he scored 23 PPR points per game in those 5 games versus 13. And honestly, even 13 in the split backfield is pretty good. But going all the way up to 23, he averaged over 20 touches. Like you said, if they don't add another wide receiver, he could see a few extra touches per game, get up to 22, 23, 24. He's like a made in the box 3 down running back that really doesn't exist very often in the NFL today. Yeah. And he becomes a legitimate RB1, like elite fantasy RB1. And you also mentioned his usage near the goal line. I will say, while I love Conner staying in Arizona, the one part that I don't love is that it hurts Kyler Murray. And we saw it last year. It threatens Murray's rushing touchdown upside. Conner had 18 goal line carries last year, and Murray only had 5. And that's a huge split. It's almost 4 times as much. And Murray is still a fantasy QB1, but I think that loss of, he would usually do like a fake handoff and then roll out and just walk into the end zone.
Yeah.
I think a lot of those are gone because those aren't fakes anymore. They just hand it to Conner and he scores.
Yeah. That was a little bit frustrating. There was a stretch where Kyler wasn't running as much. And then he came, it was odd because like he wasn't running before he had the injury, missed 3 games, and then he immediately came back and ran more than he had been.
Oh yeah.
So I think it's fair to question the touchdowns. I don't think Conner scoring 18 total touchdowns again.
Right.
But the fact remains, if he's, like I said, only Jonathan Taylor had more inside the 5 carries last year. So if he's getting an elite percentage of goal line carries and now he's getting more receiving work, like he has the exact role you want for running back in fantasy. So yeah, Conner for me is, I believe, a top 12 running back. And again, if you're drafting now, there's a lot of those drafts I mentioned where he's like going in the 5th round and it's like, he should be right around where Leonard Fournette's being drafted in the late second, third round. Like, so yeah, massive for James Conner. And we'll see what they do. Like they'll probably add a running back on like day 2 or day 3, but it's not going to be someone that's going to, take work away from James Conner. All right, a couple moves left. Let's go to the Rams. I mean, weird offseason for them. Robert Woods expected to come back. He gets traded to Tennessee. Team signs Allen Robinson. Who knows if Odell Beckham will be back after his injury. He's still a free agent. But Allen Robinson coming off maybe one of the worst performances from receiver in fantasy that I can remember. Just
horrible.
Awful season. But I do not. it's, you know, people are so quick to say, oh, this player is washed. Allen Robinson is not washed. And I think Allen Robinson could be now with no Robert Woods and maybe no Odell Beckham there as a clear receiver two on an elite offense. Man, he could be as good, as bad as he was last year. He could be as good this year. Like
he could be what everyone thought Robert Woods was going to be, you know, before he got hurt last year.
Yeah, he was labeled a bust. And I know like raw fantasy points isn't the best way to look at it. He was a wide receiver one before he got hurt. Like he was wide receiver 12, I think. So he wasn't even that bad.
Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was. I think he was just labeled a bust because he started slow. I don't have it in front of me, but he started slow. Yeah, and those first impressions usually just stick throughout the season. But unfortunately for Robinson last year, he started slow and then just absolutely never picked up. There's honestly, I was trying to find like a stat that was like, oh, look at this. You know, Robinson was good in this area last year, and there's just nothing. It's just a flat nothing burger from Robinson last year. But I'm on the same page as you. There's no way Robinson just like completely forgot how to play football, right? In 2019 and 2020, his averages from those 2 years was 100 receptions, 1200 yards and 7 touchdowns. And then he gets Andy Dalton and a really inconsistent Justin Fields, who, you know, just really gravitated towards Darnell Mooney, and Robinson just became a complete afterthought in the offense. And I think he becomes a buy low wherever his ADP settles. Mm-hmm. I am going to be interested in him at that price. The big question is, does Odell Beckham come back? And then if he does come back, will he be healthy? Because obviously tearing your ACL in February is very different than tearing it in October.
Right. Yeah, I love Robinson as a player. I still think he's incredible. And there was this theme in the fantasy community for so long. When is Allen Robinson going to have a great quarterback? When is he going to have a great quarterback? He has one, finally.
He has one now.
Yeah. And it's not like he's 35 years old. Like, I think Robinson is one of the easiest bounce-back candidates in all of fantasy heading into the season. Is he going to be, you know, is Cooper Kupp still going to dominate the targets? But, like, again, like, wide receiver two on the Rams, like...
That's the other thing about it, though. Like, Kupp, yeah, he's going to dominate the targets, but he's not going to have as good of a year. Like, yeah. I mean, and that's...
I wrote an article right before this happened, right before Woods was traded. I wrote an article. It was like teammates who could both be wide receiver ones, and I had Kupp and Woods.
And now you just replace Woods' exactly. name.
Yeah. Literally would just replace Robinson in Woods' spot, so... I'm a believer that Robinson can not only be better, obviously much better, but I think he can be a top 15 receiver. And even like when the dust settles and we get into more, you know, accurate drafts, I still think he can be a value. I would have him as a top 30 receiver pretty easily. All right, a couple more spots. Let's go to Cleveland. They were pretty busy this offseason. Amari Cooper in Cleveland, Deshaun Watson now in Cleveland. I mean, this offense all of a sudden looks a lot different than it did, you know, a month ago.
Yeah, they're going to be hard to pinpoint because they're both new to Cleveland, right? They haven't played together. It's a completely new look for the offense. My biggest questions now in Cleveland are, how much is Nick Chubb going to be used, right? I think this overall impacts him the most. But if we're just going to talk about Cooper for a second. I actually kind of like this spot for him. I did not like it when I thought Baker Mayfield was going to be the quarterback, but assuming Deshaun Watson plays, I think this is great for Cooper. He was Dallas's best and most used red zone weapon last season. He had 33 red zone targets and 10 end zone targets. He actually caught 8 of those end zone targets. So he scored eight touchdowns on those. Cleveland, I then took a look at Cleveland. They had nobody with over 16 red zone targets. So Cooper had more than 2 times as many red zone targets as anybody on Cleveland. And then they had 3 different players with 3 end zone targets or 3 end zone touchdowns, and all 3 of them were tight ends. Like, they're so desperate for a wide receiver to be used near the goal line, and that's exactly what Cooper brings to the table with them. So I think just from a pure high value target standpoint, Cooper is going to be the dude in Cleveland.
Yeah, and I think there's a very high chance that, again, with the strength of this team, with that offensive line, and then you have Chubb and Kareem Hunt in the backfield, like, I don't think they're going to be a pass-heavy or pass-first offense, but I think the passing rate goes up. And Amari Cooper right now, maybe Will Fuller goes there eventually. Maybe they draft a receiver. But, like, Amari Cooper, Austin Hooper's gone. Like, I think a 25% target share might be his floor. And, again, like, he was way up and down last year with Dallas, but he was also up and down because he was competing for targets with not only CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, Dalton Schultz, but the running backs, too. So I think Cooper could be an easy top 12 receiver.
And Landry's gone, too.
I mean, exactly.
It's like wide open in Cleveland. I also think, I mean, we have such short memories with football, but Deshaun Watson is he's incredible as a football player.
Yep.
Right? Like his stats from 2 years ago, just his basic stats, he had 33 touchdowns and only 7 interceptions and threw for almost 5,000 yards. And this was when they were still playing 16 games. Watson is, I hate to say it because I love Dak Prescott, but he's a better quarterback than Dak Prescott.
Yeah, you were on the Dak Prescott MVP train last year.
Dude, it was looking so good for a while and then it fell off. But Watson is the best quarterback that Cooper has played with. And that's saying something because Cooper has been really good his whole career.
I think Amari Cooper is in line for, like I said, at least a 25 to 30% target share. Still a really good football player. His stats, his splits, I looked at him like he has been way better indoors throughout his career, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, like I looked at it and I wrote about it, but like it's also the fact that earlier in his career he was with, I guess then they were Oakland, and they were pretty bad offense then for the most part. And then he went to Dallas where he played his home games indoors. So obviously playing in Dallas, he's been better, but overall he's been better indoors. So maybe like the cold weather games in Cleveland, but still like that's not going to go into my analysis in March and April and May and June, maybe more so on a game by game basis when we get to that part of the season.
Yeah. I think just to end on Cooper, I would be very happy with him as my wide receiver too. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting him as a wide receiver one.
It's just possible you can get him as a three too. It's not even out of the range of possibility for that. And that would be like,
I think you could get him as a three, especially if you go wide receiver heavy at the start of your draft. But if he just becomes my wide receiver two, mm-hmm. I think I'm happy with that.
All right, let's close out this initial episode with two more quarterback moves. There were a lot of them, obviously. Carson Wentz traded to the Washington football team, or the Washington Commanders, I guess, is their team name now. That's not going to be confusing either. And then Matt Ryan. There was talks about, Deshaun Watson potentially going to Atlanta. What were the Falcons going to do with Matt Ryan? He gets dealt to Indianapolis, and now Ryan's playing where Wentz just played. Let's start with Matt Ryan. I think most people agree it's an upgrade. Like, Carson Wentz's season-long numbers looked fine. But if you watch, like, he tried to give games away. You look at some of the numbers over at FTN Fantasy's advanced passing stats. He had 29 interception-worthy throws. That was among the league leaders. Just, he would throw these crazy, like, jump ball. Like, I don't think we have the stat, but I can guarantee he led the NFL in pass interference penalties drawn. Like, it was ridiculous. So Carson Wentz now with Washington, like, I don't think his philosophy is going to change, especially with Terry McLaurin. We saw Michael Pittman get targeted a ton. And it's funny, Terry McLaurin last year led the NFL in contested targets. He had the most contested targets in the NFL. I think he could lead the league again with Carson Wentz with the way he played last year.
So McLaurin, he's never really played with a good quarterback. And I wish I could say that he gets an upgrade here. I might be a little bit more skeptical than you. But yeah, I think if you're using Michael Pittman as the use case for McLaurin, you can be optimistic. We know that McLaurin is really, really good at football. It does hurt me to see that, wasn't Washington in the Deshaun Watson runnings for a little bit, or at least rumored to be?
Probably. I feel like any team that didn't have, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, like if you didn't have the elite, you're probably at least making some calls.
I wanted that to happen. I wanted DJ Moore to get a quarterback. I think if I wanted.
Yeah,
if I could rank the wide receivers that I want to get quarterbacks, it's DJ Moore, and then it's like a huge tier gap, and then it's.
I was going to say I would rank DJ Moore first, and I would still rank him second, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's my huge tier gap, and then McLaurin would be my next, but I also will say that McLaurin has performed with not good quarterback play. And even though Wentz isn't good, Wentz is still the best quarterback he has played with. So I don't really change my view on McLaurin, but it doesn't go up, but it also doesn't go down. He's still just a solid fantasy wide receiver too for me.
Yeah, I think that's how I look at it as well. I think I don't think you can look at this and say, oh, it's a downgrade going from what Washington had to Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is better than what they had, and he's going to still pepper Terry McLaurin with targets. And McLaurin had a weird season last year where, because down the stretch of the 2020 season, he played through two ankle injuries. And then last year, he just, he got a ton of targets that were just contested. So, they need to get him more, targets in space, and it's not like he can't create separation. So, I think McLaurin is... at worst, he doesn't really move for me.
I'm looking real quick at our deep receiving stats tool at FTN, and Pittman only had 8% of his targets were deep. That surprises me a little bit. I think if you're just going based on the games you watched, I would have expected it to be more.
I guess my question is, do they get, if a pass interference penalty happens, is it deemed a target still?
I don't know, in the statistic,
because if that's the case, then he has so many of those.
I actually don't know.
That's why I'm asking. I don't know either.
We'll check with the team and tweet that out. But I'm looking. Pittman only had 8% deep target rate, and McLaurin was at 13%. 13% isn't even high. But 8% is incredibly low. So I hope that McLaurin doesn't go to below 10% deep targets.
I don't think he will, especially with what they have at receiver. Curtis Samuel, if he's healthy, but Samuel's going to be, they'll kind of scheme touches and targets for him, not necessarily throw him the ball deep down the field. Let's close it out with the Colts. Matt Ryan now joining where Carson Wentz used to play. I think most people would agree it's at worst a slight upgrade. Matt Ryan didn't have a great season, but it was bad situations. Obviously didn't have his receivers last season. Matt Ryan last year became a massive check down receiver. A lot of it was pressure from the offensive line, but he threw to the running backs a lot. And I wonder if that continues this season. Obviously the offensive line is much better. What do you think it does for Michael Pittman? I don't think it really moves the needle for Jonathan Taylor. I think he's the 1-on-1 regardless. And then really it's where else do you go? Because this is a team.
Did you just say Jonathan Taylor is the 1-on-1? We're going to have a whole podcast about this.
I did.
Yeah. Cause you're wrong about that.
Okay. Yeah. That can be our next podcast then.
Yeah.
But the Colts are one of those teams too. They keep having all this cap space. They don't do anything. This is a team. I thought they would go for Allen Robinson or Christian Kirk or any receiver, and they haven't. And they don't have anything. T.Y. Hilton's a free agent still. They don't have anything after Michael Pittman. So it's I was going to ask who this affects outside of Michael Pittman. But, Jack Doyle retired. If you want to go to Mo Alley Cox or Grayson as a tight end. This team's receivers are bad.
I just pulled it up. I have not heard of half of these players. I'm not even going to lie.
They still have Paris Campbell, but he hasn't stayed healthy.
So here's my take on Ryan. I think that Ryan last year, that it was just such a weird year for Atlanta. Is their first year without Julio Jones. Calvin Ridley had his whole situation, he stepped away from football. And then Kyle Pitts was great, but a rookie and a tight end. And he's thrown to Olamide Zaccheaus and Russell Gage, who are not primary targets in an offense. And as a result, like you said, Ryan kind of became captain check down. And it was such a departure from what we had with Ryan throughout the years, especially just even as recent as a couple of years ago when he's thrown to Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley.
Julio's right? Still out there too.
That's actually true. I actually like the Julio to Indianapolis
so do I.
Matchup that people on Twitter want to have happen. It makes too much sense, especially when looking at Indianapolis's depth chart. But in terms of what this does to Matt Ryan is maybe a slight upgrade, but not that much, because Indianapolis does not have that much more than Atlanta had last year, but they do at least have Pittman. Pittman's good, not great. In games last year when he had at least four targets, which is a super, or sorry, at least seven targets, which splits his games about in half. He was good with those targets, but not like incredible, right? He still only scored 0.4 touchdowns per game, which I think if you're talking about a receiver that you want to see 7, 8, 9, 10 targets per game, you're probably going to want more than 6 touchdowns from them throughout
probably
the entire
blame
year.
Jonathan Taylor for that one.
that's a good point. Yeah. I don't have it in front of me, but Taylor's red zone touches were like double anybody else in the league.
Yeah. It was insane.
That's a good point. I probably shouldn't blame Pittman for that one, but I think this helps Pittman. Ryan is obviously better than Carson Wentz. So this does make me like Michael Pittman. And I also think, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I think Matt Ryan is not toast, and I could see him playing in Indianapolis for a few years. So I think this helps Pittman both in redraft, but also in dynasty. So I think Pittman becomes a buy in dynasty right now. And then in terms of other players to check down to, Jonathan Taylor was hardly used as a receiver last year. There were several games where he only had like one target, zero targets, which was kind of infuriating, but he made up for it by running for a bunch of touchdowns. But oh my gosh, if he starts receiving the ball, then you might have a point to your
right.
Him being the
like,
1.01.
Even if he gets to like how many catches did he finish with last year?
Let me look it up.
Because like, if they both play full season, McCaffrey, I was going to say, like, if you can get up to like 55, that could be enough, or 60. But like, if McCaffrey, I mean, we'll talk about it. It's a fair point. But like, if McCaffrey stays healthy, he's catching what, at least 90 passes. It was weird too. If you look at the receptions for running backs last year, it was way down across the board. Like
it was
like Najee had a lot. Eckler had a lot. Fournette had a lot, but like, it wasn't the same as we've seen in years past. So
yeah. Taylor only having 40 though is problematic. I think it's problematic from a real football perspective. I just don't know why
he doesn't play on 2-minute drills.
I guess that's my point. Like it doesn't make sense. Like you don't take him out of the game because I just don't get it. Maybe I never will, but I just to me that's wrong. And if they can correct that, you know, maybe Matt Ryan comes in and he's like, no, I want Taylor on the field. I want to throw him the ball. Then that could really change. It could change everything. I mean, Matt Ryan checking down to Devontae Freeman a couple of years ago, and Freeman, I guess this was like 7 years ago now, right? When Freeman went nuts, Freeman was getting all of these goal line touches, goal line carries, and he was getting work out of the backfield. And he finished as just an incredibly elite fantasy player that year. Obviously, Taylor's already at that level, but if he gets those receptions, he becomes Christian McCaffrey level good.
Yeah, and like he was lining up as a receiver a lot last year too, so it's not exactly the greatest comparison. But Cordarrelle Patterson, the way he was used last year, Mike Davis was running a ton of routes last year, even with Cordarrelle Patterson. So there is a path, and I actually did. I saw one of the Colts beat reporters say like, keep an eye on Nyheim Hines for fantasy this season, which is not exactly what we want to hear, but it just kind of shows like, I think that's more so to do with the fact that we talk about the Colts just don't have receivers right now. Like Zach Pascal is their second best receiver, and he's gone. Like that's where we're at with the Colts. So, but yeah, I mean, the NFL offseason has been crazy. We could have sat here for, again, 3 hours. We could have talked about the Jacksonville Jaguars, the moves they made, some of the other moves in free agency. But, and there's still going to be more moves to be made. There's still a lot of free agents out there. But this is a fun first episode, man. I'm excited about this. If you could do so, please leave us a rating and a review over on iTunes. It'll help us out a lot. And again, we'll be doing this once a week for sure during the offseason, maybe up to twice a week during the regular season. And to pair it with that, I mean, Tyler, we have, you know, the NFL draft is in weeks now. We have football coming up. The content in FTN is going to be awesome.
Yeah, this is when I start to get pretty excited for the next football season. I know free agency is kind of crazy, but it still feels really far out. Once the draft hits and you start getting some of those early practices in, I get pretty hyped about it.
Absolutely. So we will be back again once a week. This is the FTN Datacast. You can follow me on Twitter at AFIFER24. Follow Tyler on Twitter at LochnerNFL. Hit us up with any questions, anything, any, you know, comments, concerns, anything you want to hear on the podcast. Please let us know, because that'll help us out a lot. FTN Datacast, again, subscribe, rate, review. Check out FTN Fantasy, FTN Daily, FTN Bets for all this data that you heard today, plus a ton of great other content for DFS, season-long, baseball starting in a couple days. Vlad and the team are just crushing content. There is so much to look forward to over at FTN Network, including this great podcast that I'm excited to launch and have launched now with Tyler Lochner. Have a great week. We will see you next time. Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to the FTN Datacast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at AFIFER24 and at LochnerNFL.